Yes, friends, it's time for Let's Talk Mental Health. This local program discusses behavioral issues of concern to the North Shore community and resources to help. Let's Talk Mental Health is produced at the studios of KTWHLP in Two Harbors, Minnesota. The topic for this month's discussion is going to be on suicide prevention. Every 12 minutes, someone in the U.S. takes his or her own life, and for every one suicide, there are 25 attempts. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S., and the number and rate of suicides are rising. Every year, more than 900,000 emergency department visits are made by people thinking of suicide. Death by suicide has increased by over 24% over the last 15 years in the U.S., with more than 42,000 people dying from suicide each year. Statistics show that suicide rates have risen across all age groups and genders during this period. Though even with a 200% increase in the suicide rate of females ages 10 to 14, the suicide rate of men remains almost four times higher than that of women. Suicide as a public health issue affects everyone: families, healthcare providers, school personnel, faith community, friends, and government. The good news is that suicide is often preventable. Public health experts suggest that the key to lowering the suicide rate is prevention, including educating the public about recognizing suicidal behavior and improving support facilities for those who are at risk. Broadcast, we are going to be discussing suicide prevention, and this is a very relevant topic to any area within the country at all. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration of the U.S. government reports that every 12 minutes, someone in the U.S. takes his or her own life, and for every one suicide, there are 25 attempts. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S., and the number and rate of suicides are rising. Each year, more than 900,000 emergency department visits are made by people thinking of committing suicide. And to help discuss that, today we have with us Allie Randall. Allie Randall is the public health educator for the Carlton County Public Health and Human Services Department and also the Northeast Minnesota Regional Suicide Prevention and Crisis Text Line Coordinator. Allie, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much for giving us your time and being here. Before we jump right into the subject of suicide prevention, could you give us some background about yourself, what got you into public service, government, and into suicide prevention?
Definitely. Well, to start, I got a degree in public health. And what really brought me to that was I was working as an EMT, and a lot of the situations I said, man, this is preventable. What if we would have done this ahead of time? And I think that's really what drives my passion for prevention, because a lot of, especially death by suicide, any other accidents, things like that, a lot of those can be prevented with education and some implementation strategies. And so that's kind of what got me going with passion. And then I was fortunate to go to Mankato State. And then I moved up here and got my hands and feet wet in substance use prevention work. And now I recently just made the switch to suicide prevention. And so personally, I've dealt with some things on my own and had to work through that. And so I am able to speak with some, you know, personal experience behind it. And then on the flip side, I really do feel passionate about preventing suicide in a way that we know that it is preventable. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, thank you very much. With suicide prevention, your experience and being in Carlton County and all the way up through Carlton, St. Louis, Lake, even Cook County, what is the significance of suicide in our North Shore area society?
Yeah, so to speak kind of on broader terms, we know that in the state, it is the suicide is the second leading cause of death for youth and young adults between ages 10 and 24. And so that was kind of where I think a lot of the Minnesota Department of Health partners started and said, you know, we need to make a plan that bridges into our communities. And they have some goals laid out on the Minnesota Department of Health website if you ever are curious and want to see where the state is moving in terms of suicide prevention.
Absolutely. And I take it they've got data and resources on that website as well?
Yeah, typically, I think the numbers sometimes, they're good to know, but I think it's more important to know what to do. And so that's kind of why I like to dwell more on that. Definitely, Minnesota Department of Health is a great resource, same with Department of Human Services, if you have access to the internet, to look those up.
Well, as we work up to the prevention aspect, and as you said, that is really the most important thing to talk about on the broadcast today, can you address some of the myths versus facts regarding suicide?
I like to start here because I think this is a good way to kind of just open the air so people can start thinking about it maybe in a different lens. We know suicide can affect a multitude of different people when one happens or when someone maybe brings it up in a conversation. And so usually dispelling the myths is really enables us to be a better help of our friends and family. So one big myth that I hear a lot is no one can stop suicide. It's inevitable. And the fact about that, in a crisis, get the help they need, they will probably never be suicidal again. And I think that gives us a little bit of hope when we think about, man, if I could help my friend now, or if me, myself, I can reach out and get help, then I might not have this again. And so that's an important myth to dispel.
Well, you had addressed before youth, adolescents, teens, young adults. Actually, it can affect anybody through any age group, but it is more prevalent in certain age groups. What would those risk factors be that we should be aware of?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So we'll kind of come back probably to a few more myths that I want to cover. But one big thing that we really like to drive home is that because, you know, someone could have all the list of risk factors to suicide, and they could never have a thought of suicide. On the flip side, someone could have no risk factors to suicide and also experience thoughts of suicide. And so when we think about that, we really want to go through the lens of anyone can be at risk. Now, there's heightened risk factors. So maybe someone with mental health conditions or a traumatic brain injury, people with access to lethal means, prolonged stress, historic suicide. And there's some other warning signs that we'll talk about a little bit more. But I guess when we look at risk factor, it is important for all of us to obviously understand some risk factors, maybe someone going through an event, a stressful event, grief, loss. But we also want to make sure we're looking through the lens that anyone could be at risk of this. And I think that sometimes opens our eyes a little bit more to everyone in our lives.
Well, you had mentioned before that there were other myths that you wanted to address. Could you go ahead and highlight those now for us?
So a few of the ones that I want to kind of dispel is one myth is that only experts can prevent suicide. And the real fact of it, and one thing that I really opened my eyes when I got into this field, is that suicide is everyone's business and anyone can help prevent the tragedy of suicide. So as a coach to young adults, I never realized how important my leverage was on their lives. Just being available to talk, being able to recognize things in their life, I'm in a really great position to do so. Same with your good friend or your neighbor, someone you talk to often, you are in a great position to prevent suicide. Another myth that we hear is that if we talk about suicide, it could plant a seed in someone's mind. So we'll get into it a little bit more on how to help a friend or confront a friend. Oftentimes we think, well, if I bring up the topic of suicide, it may plant a seed. And what research and experts are telling us is that this is not the case. If someone is having thoughts of suicide, you may leave a lot of the anxiety they're thinking about. On the flip side, if someone is not thinking about suicide, you won't plant a seed. And then just a final one, confronting a person about suicide will only make them angry and increase the risk of suicide. And the fact about that is asking someone directly about suicide intent usually lowers anxiety, opens up communication, and lowers the risk of any impulse act. What I kind of want to say to the general public here is, and which we'll cover, is just that each person is different, of course, with their response. But when we talk about people with thoughts of suicide, they're not doing anything wrong, so we're not getting them in trouble by asking. But it's sometimes and often how we ask. So we'll go into that a little bit more. But those are just some of the myths and facts we wanted to talk about.
All right. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And that'll get us into knowing how to help others. And that would be, first of all, are we aware of and what the warning signs and symptoms are of somebody who may be potentially at risk for suicide?
So often when we're in the schools doing presentations on crisis text line and suicide prevention, one easy way to break it down is that we're always going to be looking at signs, but we're going to look at our individual friend or family member or community member, and we're going to say, is this reaction healthy and is this reaction normal for them? And if the answer is no to either of them, then we want to kind of take a look at maybe if there's other signs available. The more clues and signs observed in an individual, the greater the risk. So no matter what, we want to take all signs seriously. With COVID-19 being at the forefront of most of our news and with the social distancing, I want to encourage people to understand that physical distancing isn't necessarily social distancing. So we can still check in on our friends and family members, to maybe see those warning signs. Like you had asked, some of the warning signs, there could be direct verbal clues. So this could be, I'm going to commit suicide. They might not say it in that manner. They may say, I've decided to end my own life. That would be more of a direct verbal cue. An indirect verbal clue might be, I'm just tired of my life. Some things that might be out of character for this individual. I won't be around much longer. Pretty soon you won't have to worry about me. Those are indirect verbal clues. And again, each person is different. The bigger one, and oftentimes that we talk to students about, is situational clues. So this might be watching someone be fired or expelled. So recently, a lot of people may have shifted their workforce due to COVID. So that might be something we look at, situational clues. A recent unwanted move, a death of a spouse or a best friend or a child, especially if it was by suicide, diagnosis of terminal illness, sudden loss. There's a huge list of different situational clues. And what we look at is we look at what happened, and then we look at the behavior with it. It's kind of what we call a storyline. We want to look at the whole picture. We could look at someone with a truckload of risk factors, and they may not be having thoughts of suicide. On the flip side, someone may just be having a situational clue and be having a thought of suicide. So the behavioral clues might be acquiring something, giving away personal items, prized possessions. Those are pretty typical, but maybe a disinterest in religion, drug or alcohol abuse, unexplained aggression, irritability, and then co-occurring depression or hopelessness. That's a big part of it. And so those warning signs, again, it's such a complex topic that no one is expert on this. And so when we look for the warning signs, we want to ask ourselves those two questions I started with. Is this healthy for this individual and is it normal? And again, with COVID, that might add an extra layer. For example, checking in with a friend over a phone call or things like that.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate all of that excellent information. You had mentioned about youth, teens. Are there groups of people that are higher risk than others statistically for suicide ideations or actual attempts?
I don't want to speak off of anything I don't know, like concrete here, but I do know we look at different groups of individuals, so veterans, people, first responders, elderly who may be experiencing some new life changes, young adults, college students, young teens. Those typically we see higher numbers, but again, I want us to be looking through the lens that anyone could be at risk. And of course, like you said, there's different groups that may report higher numbers, and we want to emphasize those, but there's different ways to connect with each of those groups, and that's kind of what the state is working on. Just to give you an example, this was years past, of course, but when Crisis Text Line came about, or Text for Life was what it used to be called, that obviously went with the population of maybe our older residents. And that was really to target suicide prevention within a younger community. Same with things on the flip side. So with our elders, our elderly, we want to do different things to help with suicide prevention. So our strategies have been different with each group that we just kind of spoke on.
Well, thank you very much. As the listening audience is aware, I'm a veteran, and we average approximately 21 suicides a day. And the active duty Guard Reserve have instituted and implemented a program called 21-0, and that's on suicide prevention, which now is a good segue into what I think you really wanted us to know about is how do we help others? And first of all, the most critical aspect, if we're with someone in an emergency situation, what should we do?
That's a really great question. And thanks for bringing up the veteran numbers. And I never intend to downplay any of the numbers. And we'll talk a little bit about those different resources available for individual groups, because we know everyone's struggling with maybe something different. Back to your question about if we find ourselves in an emergency. I just recently took a psychological first aid training, and I thought it was really interesting. He brought up the 35W bridge collapse and how people on the bridge that were helping other strangers didn't necessarily have training at that moment, right? They were just put into this situation and had to deal with it. And so what he really kind of inspired me to tell the general public is that our psych first aid is somewhat built in. So if someone's in an emergency, your gut reaction is typically to go get help. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. If we're in a medical emergency or a crisis situation, you can always call 911, and the dispatchers are trained to help you walk through that in a way that would be successful. So maybe if it doesn't require medical treatment, they can help you navigate that. And so I really do encourage you to stick with your gut if you feel like you're in an emergency situation in that. Now, the goal of suicide prevention is to, before that crisis emergency situation happens, we're able to prevent that. Kind of to give you a bigger picture, we're trying to look upstream on how can we prevent this and how can we decrease people feeling in those, falling into those crisis situations. But yes, if you're in an emergency, we obviously, of course, want you to call 911.
Well, again, a nice segue going from the emergency, which is the here and now, into being proactive prior to it. If we see any of the signs or symptoms, what then are recommended intervention actions or strategies?
That's really great that we segued that way. So there are, we'll go over some hotlines, which might have come to mind when people said, if I'm in the emergency, that's who I call. But I want us to remember that sometimes this could be a medical emergency, so we want to call 911. But there's other hotlines and lifelines that we can call as well, and I'll cover those. But if we do feel like someone, you know, we say that this reaction isn't normal, it isn't healthy for this individual. Maybe he recently went through a job loss. He's no longer connected with maybe a veterans group he was connected with or she was connected with. And now I'm starting to put together these facts that I heard on the radio. Well, our next step, and there's plenty of trainings that you can walk through online, or you can get in contact with me to be trained. But what we really, through a question, persuade, and refer training that we always say, is that we want to ask about suicide, and we want to ask in a non-judgmental way. And like I said, that first initial myth is why, or that last myth of planting a seed of suicide by asking about it, is oftentimes why people don't ask. Maybe it's uncomfortable to ask, or we don't know what if they say yes. And so to backtrack, our first step is to really talk to the individual, see what's going on. If it's a friend or loved one, say you are worried about them, say you've noticed these different changes, and I just wanted to check in. If the opportunity presents itself, we want to ask about suicide, and we want to ask in a direct manner. The reason we want to ask in a direct manner is because if someone is experiencing thoughts of suicide, often they've maybe just been waiting for someone to ask them that direct question. When people have thoughts of suicide, sometimes society might label them as crazy, or we hear different terms about that, crazy or out of their mind, things like that. And that's simply not the case. Oftentimes we see maybe it was depression that was just undiagnosed or untreated or things like that. And so to answer your question, long story short, we want to ask about suicide. We want to ask directly. Except to that is the listen. But did you have any follow-ups on asking?
Well, no, it was going to be with the asking and the listening that you're going to go into for us. The person, the friend, whoever, hearing and thinking there might be possibility of a suicidal ideation, to actually ask and to listen does show care on our part as well, which is what a person may actually be looking for. Is that correct?
That is very correct. Oftentimes, and we are just natural healers, I think, especially up in the Northland, we want to help. And so when we hear someone that might respond to our question with a yes or I think so, we instantly want to jump aboard and help. And that definitely is a great attribute to us Northlanders. But we want to listen. And this person doesn't necessarily need you to fix their problems, but more or less just be a place that they feel that they are not being judged and that they are being understood, and that you have some empathy and compassion towards them at that moment. And I think I'm like to speak a little personally here. It was kind of when I was waiting for someone to maybe bring up the topic to me, I did start to think like, maybe I am being just dramatic or ungrateful or things like that. And then it took someone asking directly about suicide that really opened up my way of thinking and saying, you know, yeah, I did have the warning signs and things like that. So that's something to think about. But it is very effective to ask the question directly. And if you don't feel comfortable, of course, you want to find someone who can. And then, of course, listening with open ears and low judgment. And oftentimes that friend that can be all the difference right there, is you just listening.
And after the listening, what would you advise us to do?
The next step, and this is part of a QPR training, which I really highly recommend people get trained in. Just one thing to note is that we want to go find help. We want to help this person know that they can be helped, and we want to refer them to someone. And now, we're not all medical mental health therapists. I certainly am not. And so sometimes this can feel overwhelming, like, okay, I can ask my friend and I can listen, but to find them help, where do I even start? And this is important. Suicidal people often believe that they cannot be helped. So you may have to do more than just ask and listen. And so the best referral involves taking a person directly to someone who can help. And then the next best referral would be getting them to commit to go get help. And so since almost all efforts to persuade someone to live instead of an attempt at suicide will be met with a lot of relief from this individual, don't hesitate to get involved and take the lead on this. So that's kind of our next step. Your willingness to listen and to help can rekindle that hope in someone. And hope really does make all the difference here.
Well, what I heard you say was to ask, listen, and then if needed, take action. If the action is taken, if the referrals are made, if somebody may have been contemplating suicide, what might they anticipate as follow-up types of treatments?
Yeah, that's a great question. there's some different ways we want to look at this. Like you said, there's some numbers out there, and I don't like going into too much of the numbers, but oftentimes that question and listening can get people to start thinking a little bit differently about their thoughts about suicide. So maybe they start thinking, you know, what is the root of this? If you do know someone who is in crisis, there's resources available. And so I'm going to list these off, and we can I can get you these in a printed form. But the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, that can be called in, and it's confidential 24 hours, 7 days a week. So this might be your next best resource. So what I mean by that is if you have a loved one in your home or someone who you feel like you should ask, all of these people on the other side of the lifeline are trained to help you maybe navigate that. So this lifeline is also for us as loved ones or neighbors or community members to say, man, I think I need to ask. I think I need to listen. But then what do I do next? So the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number is 1-800-273-8255. So that's a call-in line that's available to us. There's the deaf and hard of hearing can contact the lifeline in different manners. All calls are confidential, like I said. The next line that I recommend would be crisis text line. And I've used this personally just for it was a simple day that I just needed some help navigating a situation with a friend. And so what crisis text line is it's free, confidential. It's available 24/7. And you text MN, so the letters MN, to 741-741. So in the message, you'd write MN, like where you'd put, hey, how are you? And then if you were sending it to your neighbor, Cheryl, you would type 741-741 instead. And that's just a great crisis text line because, I do like the call lines, but as a true millennial myself, I would much rather text. So that's something that we do highlight in our high schools and our middle schools to students, but anyone can use either of them. The Suicide Prevention Lifeline, again, is 1-800-273-8255, and that would be a call line. The crisis text line, you text MN to 741-741. And that's going to be a text-in line. Now, there are veterans crisis lines available, as well as local crisis mobile units available, too. And I can send those numbers over. The veterans crisis line is obviously connects service members and veterans in crisis, as well as their family members with people at the Department of the VA. So that one is also confidential. They do have online chat and text message services. But you dial 1-800-273-8255. So it sounds like it's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. But then you're going to get pushed through to a VA responder if you press a certain number. And I believe that's changed. That's kind of how we navigate those lines. And one way that we could do that if we have a friend or a family member is maybe, hey, I have this crisis text line number. I think you should reach out to them. Or here's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. How about we give them a call together?
Well, thank you very much. And I think you made a good connection right there along the Highway 6135 corridor. People may have noticed that there's a lot of billboards and it says MN Let's Talk. And I believe you just addressed that. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I didn't directly talk about those. So MN Let's Talk is a great resource too. So what I'm doing right now is basically breaking it down by if you're in an immediate situation, you can go to Let's Talk as well. So they're also there to listen and not judge. So they help anyone, children or adults. But one thing that they can do is they can dispatch a mobile team, and so can the other resources I gave, but they're more commonly well known for that too. I'm going to pull up our regional mental health resource line. What that is basically someone who can get a mental health resource closer to home. And so the number for that is going to be, and this services Lake, Cook, Grand Portage, St. Louis, and Carleton. This is going to be 218-623-1800. And the reason that sometimes this one is a little bit different than the others is they can obviously answer your questions and connect you with resources locally, but they can also dispatch a mobile crisis team and offer short-term residential crisis services. So that billboard, like you just mentioned, is Let's Talk Minnesota. The crisis text line I brought up was it's a national service, but also done regionally. And then the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is also a resource. So that was kind of overwhelming. There's a lot of resources, but that goes to show that there's a ton of people out there to help and help you navigate this any situation you find yourself in, whether you yourself are experiencing thoughts of suicide, or you are dealing with maybe you have a high school student in the home, you start to recognize warning signs, or maybe your husband or wife or neighbor. You have all of these resources available to you.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Allie. We're coming to the end of our broadcast time. If you could you just do a quick wrap-up summary of the high points you want the listening audience to be aware of?
So some of the biggest high points that I always like to point or drive home is that anyone can be at risk of suicide, and there are groups of individuals who may be at higher risk. But we always want to look at, there's no one type of person who could have thoughts of suicide. That type of person could be anyone. There's many resources available, but it's important that we know how to access them. So remember, I went over the call line, the text line, the mobile crisis line, which was the Let's Talk. There's also 211, which is for to access local resources. 911 is for your immediate crisis. So again, 211 can get you connected to any of those resources I covered. 911 will get you immediate crisis. The other thing I want to drive home is that asking a question about suicide cannot plant a seed in someone's head. That's only a myth. Experts are telling us that oftentimes when we reach out, people will be met with relief when we ask that question if they are experiencing thoughts of suicide. If they are not, they'll simply just understand that you're being a good friend. I drove home the point that remembering that all efforts that you do to pursue someone to live their life and give them hope instead of attempt suicide will be met with agreement and relief. This is giving you the go-ahead to get involved and take the lead to help a friend. We're trying to instill hope in people, and I want people to understand that hope helps prevent suicide, and you plant that when you become someone there or apply that questioning. If you are struggling with thoughts of suicide or know someone who is, remember that you are not alone and that there's people out here and that this is a preventable.
Allie Randall, public health educator, Carlton County Public Health and Human Services, and the Northeast Minnesota Regional Suicide Prevention and Crisis Text Line Coordinator. Want to thank you very much for talking to us today. And we do wish everybody that if you ever have a doubt, ask the question, be a friend, and get help. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Goodbye. We welcome your feedback on the program today and also your suggestions for future topics of discussions. Again, you can email your responses to our new email address, ltmhradio@gmail.com. This program serves to provide resources needed for practicing good mental health. The program is broadcast the third Monday of each month at 11 a.m. and repeated the following Sunday at 12 noon. Program is produced at the studios of KTWHLP 99.5 in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Until next time, for Let's Talk Mental Health, this is your host, Chris Belfield. Thanks for listening. Thank you.